All right, my pal Dr. Ian Smith is in studio. Dr. Ian is also the author of the popular Ash Kane novels, a mystery detective series set in Chicago. The fourth installment, Eagle Rock, was recently released, and in this latest novel, Ash Kane returns to investigate the death of a wealthy textile tycoon, Elliot Cantor, and what's supposed to be a relaxing summer off working on his golf game suddenly turns into a deep... It sounds like you know, not working on your golf game here. So this book is taken from real life, your life, and close friends, isn't it, Dr. Rand?
It is, yeah. This whole series really has a wealth of resources for me to draw from.
Yeah.
You know, the Ash Kane series, really, I gave birth to it because I wanted to create a character I'd never seen in books or on the TV screen.
Yeah.
The other thing was, I felt as though, and I'm being selfish here, like, you know, Michael Connelly's Bosch has L.A.
Yeah.
Robert B. Parker's Spencer had Boston.
Yeah.
Harlan Coben has Jersey. But who has Chicago?
Yeah.
And I felt like there should be a guy in Chicago highlighting our city for the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so that is what the Ash Kane series does. The Ash Kane series is only based in Chicago. It's our streets, it's our lake, it's our buildings, our restaurants, our neighborhoods. He does travel a little bit. In this case, you know, he's woken up late one morning because Elliot Cantor, billionaire Chicago man, is found in a compromised position. In his
bed.
We'll
just call it that.
We'll call it that. In a compromised position, and the son is there with CPD. Commander Rory Burke, who's a recurring character who everyone loves, says to the guy, listen, if you really want this to be taken care of quietly and efficiently, there's a guy who can do it who has no restrictions. His name is Ash Kane. And that's our guy.
There you go.
Ash Kane is a former CPD detective who leaves because he won't participate in the cover-up. Gets a nice little settlement from CPD and decides that he's going to take on cases in around the city at his liking. So he takes on very few cases. He's a golf fanatic, as you says. He likes to collect classic cars. He's tough. He's like the new... I was hoping that he would be, and I think he is. He's like the new age PI.
Yeah.
Right? You know, in the old days, you had Columbo, right?
I was thinking Rockford in my head.
Rockford. Jim Rockford, right?
Jim Rockford,
so,
yeah.
You know, curmudgeonly, kind of, you know, chomping cigars. I wanted to create a newer version of that. So this guy is hip. He'll quote Shakespeare one minute and quote rap artists like Kendrick Lamar the next. He moves very easily from the affluent North Shore to the gritty west side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of Ash Kane is he is always authentically himself. No matter where he is.
Well, Chicago being the star of the show, you know as well as I do, there are Chicago TV shows and detective shows and fire shows and, and movies that are here where they try to capture it. But to have somebody who really knows the city and the restaurants and the buildings and the streets and everything else, it really is the co-star of these books. It's Ash Kane, but also Chicago, I feel like, is the co-star of these books.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because the way I describe it is that Chicago is a character in the book, just like the human characters are. Because the city has a pulse, it has energy, it has a life to it, the city itself, right?
Yeah.
And so I want people who've never been to Chicago to feel Chicago. And one of the greatest compliments I get from people is, wow, I've never been to Chicago, but I feel like I was just there for, you know, a couple hours reading this book. But I also want Chicagoans to be proud of our city and to love the depiction of our city. And like I said, you know, it's a realistic approach. I mean, Chicago has its tough aspects. It has its easy aspects. It's nice. It's not nice. It's everything. And so I just really... deep in my heart, hope that Chicago is proud of Ash Kane and the way our city works.
Well, and these are great books for no matter where you are in the country, but I think for people who live in Chicago, you will absolutely enjoy this a little bit more.
Yeah, excuse me. And I think the readership is very wide, and people all over the country are really loving it. This is the first time I actually released early copies across the country to, like, they call them book talkers and bookstagrammers, and the feedback has been really, really great.
Yeah.
People are now reading Eagle Rock, which is the new installment, but they're then going back and reading the previous three installments.
Yeah, let's talk about those. Let's talk about starting from the very beginning when we got introduced to the character.
Yeah, so Unspoken is the first one, book one. And by the way, you can read them out of order. You don't have to read them in order, but some people are now reading Eagle Rock and go back. Unspoken, and each book is its own case. It's a standalone. I wrote it that way on purpose. But the Unspoken is one of Chicago's most notorious gangsters' nephew is dating a young lady from the North Shore, and she goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ash Kane is hired by her affluent family to find where their daughter is.
Right.
That was the unspoken. Then there was Wolf Point, book number two, and that is where the Chicago School Board president is found mysteriously half-submerged, dead, in the Chicago River. At a place called Wolf Point, mm-hmm. which back right. in the day, by the way, yeah, was right. not a very nice
no.
place.
No.
Now it's a, you know, widely developed and beautiful.
Yes,
but
gorgeous.
But this happens when Wolf Point was trash strewn and rat infested.
Mm-hmm.
So they find this school board president and his Cadillac nearby, and he's half submerged in the Chicago River. Ash Kane comes and tries to figure out what happens. And then the most recent book last year was The Overnights.
Mm-hmm.
Where two anchor women, local anchor women, are in a fight for the ratings wars, for sweeps, who has the highest ratings in the newscast.
Was it Micah and Cheryl?
I'm not going to say any names, but...
No, I know. We talked about
those,
this before.
But those, who read,
those
yeah. who read the overnights are going to recognize yeah. some familiar faces that they see on the screen, who all of them are my friends, by the way, so I'm
yeah,
not going after them, right?
I know they are.
But in that case, these two women are having this ratings war. One is being stalked by a fan.
Yeah.
And then something happens, and Ash Kane is called in to figure out what exactly is going on. So those are the three previous books. Once again, independent cases,
yeah.
standalone, so you can start wherever you want, and then you now have Eagle Rock.
You know, you live in the city, so there's a good chunk of inspiration that you can get from the headlines, and I think that's what makes it so connected, too, for
every
people.
Day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at some of the TV shows that Dick Wolf has produced.
Yeah.
A lot of them are ripped from the headlines,
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
so I feel like Chicago, any night where you're sitting there watching the news or reading it on your phone from one of the stations, you just shake your head and say, wow.
Yeah.
And it's an embarrassment of riches that there's so much content. I mean, yeah, I'm creative. I take premises and kind of make them something else.
Yeah.
But geez, you don't have to look far to find some interesting premises.
You don't. And you also do this too. You have a symbol of Chicago, a really unique one that's not easily recognizable on every book cover. It's like testing people's knowledge, right?
Yeah. So this book cover of Eagle Rock.
I know you can't see it, but we're holding it up.
but when you look at it online, you will see a statue.
Yeah.
And what I will say to the listeners right now is the first person who can tell me the name of the statue, where it's located, and who created it, I will send you a free copy of my next book in January, mm-hmm. which is called Eat Your Age.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about. But
yeah,
this is a little fun. So see if you can figure out where the statue is, the name of the statue, and who created it.
Where do they go to share that with you?
Oh, on my Instagram.
Okay.
At Dr. Ian Smith. Spell the doctor out. I-A-N Smith. At Dr. Ian Smith. Just send it to me. I did this last week. I was on GN TV.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
Somebody won. So let's see who can figure this out. You Chicagoans, or though, even, by the way, you don't have to be in Chicago to figure this out.
If you figure out
anywhere.
The statue,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right,
the beauty
right.
of the internet.
Now, you talked about Eat Your Age, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but you also finished the fifth book, The Alderman, already. Now, I'm not sure how you came up with that, because there are very few stories in the headlines about our aldermen. I mean, in 187 years, they're very clean people, so I don't know what you're talking about.
This is what I mean.
Brilliant, by the way. Yeah.
The stories write themselves,
they write themselves
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But the interesting thing is I started writing this before the most recent, I'm not going to name any names, but before the most recent collapse of a very major alderman, I started writing this before then.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the collapse happened. So I'm excited about that book. That's a fun book.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was in the gym the other morning, and a Chicago businessman by the name of Jim Reynolds, who loves Ash Kane.
Yeah.
Loves it. And can't wait. I actually give him the advanced copies. And he just says,
oh, I love that.
And he says to me, he says, man, he says, your imagination is just crazy. Like,
yeah.
I just finished this thing.
Yes.
I couldn't figure it out all the way to the end. And that's the kind of response, the kind of feeling that an author in this genre would like.
Well, I will tell you, too, I read a lot of books because it's a job to read a lot of books because I'm interviewing folks. I enjoy these. Like, this is fun to read.
It's fun, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And that's my point is I want you to have fun reading it. I want you not to have to spend too many brain cells,
yeah.
right, trying to analyze. I want you to just have fun and go for the ride. And along the way, I'd like you to try to guess, like, did this really happen? And pay attention to the little small details. And I think that people have a good time reading the books because of that.
And you talked about Colombo, Rockford, whatever, but you've been thinking about this, touring this for a while, turning this into a series. I mean, it's been optioned, I think, right?
It's been optioned. Yeah. Hollywood is kind of in a state of transition, so they are working. So the way it works is you get an option, which means that a producer will buy the rights to make it into something. Once that happens, then you sell it to a network.
Oh, this takes time to do this.
It takes time,
stuff.
Right. Absolutely. But it's in the path to become. And by the way, you know, people ask me, how do I write? I don't write from an outline. I am a visual writer. So I spend 2 months thinking of the story in my head first. And I see things in a cinematic way.
In the locations, right?
I see the people. I see the setting. I can hear the voices. So when I come up with a beginning and a middle and an end, and I have the characters, the main characters that I like, and I know what they're going to do, then I sit down to my computer and I write. And so the idea that these could be made into a streaming TV show or a movie actually fits how I like to write and see them.
And the first book I think that you liked, the thriller that you really got into, was The Firm, that got turned into a movie, right?
Yeah, John Grisham. Yeah, I mean, I was reading John Grisham before he became the John Grisham.
Yeah, right.
But what I loved most about his work was the pace of it. The Firm was just a nonstop, you can't stop reading it. Same thing with Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code, which came obviously many years later.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of books that I like to read where I'm just trying to squeeze in one more chapter.
Yeah.
And The Firm for me as a younger person is what did it for me. And the way I felt, you know, reading the book at stop signs or red lights, trying to get another sentence in, I said to myself, even back then when I was a kid, I said, geez, boy, would I love to be able to create some type of writing, some kind of story that could captivate someone and engage someone. And so that's been kind of my inspiration to do the Ash Kane series.
Well, and you're great at what you do every day, but you also have to have, I don't want to call it a hobby because it's become more than a hobby, but like you have to have a passion and drive, I think, on the side to do something for yourself. And I think that's exactly what these novels are for you.
I think everyone has to figure out what else can they do in life other than their main thing to have fun at.
Dr. Ian Smith is in studio. His new novel is Eagle Rock. His new book coming out this January called Eat Your Age. Can you stick around for a bit? Talk to our listeners. Eating healthy, of course, kids going back to school, all that good stuff. Let's do it. All right. More with Dr. Ian Smith after this on 720 WGN. All right. Dr. Ian Smith is in studio. His new novel is Eagle Rock. He has a new book coming out this January called Eat Your Age. You've written, I think more than this, released 26 books.
This is number 26.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, I don't really think about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I tell people when they're trying to lose weight. I say, when you're trying to lose weight, you come up with a number, right? An overall number.
Yeah.
Let's say it's 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Take that number and tuck it away. Don't pay attention to that number because the number becomes overwhelming. Because then you'll be saying to yourself, geez, 30 pounds. How am I going to lose 30 pounds? Instead, say to yourself, 1 pound. Then 2 pounds, then 3 pounds, then maybe no pounds. So you break up the big goal into small goals. So for me, I don't look at 26. That's a big number for a number of books on a shelf. I look at what I'm working on and what's right now. And so that keeps me humble and it keeps me focused. But yes, 26 is a pretty big number.
Well, I will tell you, I don't like talking about me on the air, but one of your early books, and first of all, we've been talking for over 10 years, and I remember that first time, it was one of your early books, and you came in with me, I think it was New Year's Day, after midnight, and you took calls for like an hour and a half or whatever it was. It was early on. But, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, I really did follow your regime, and I lost 30 pounds and have kept it off. And it started with intermittent fasting and actually working out and doing some other things. And even my youngest son, who's hanging out in the studio, says to me, you know, he goes, yeah, you were a big guy. Like, you know, and we look back at pictures. He's waving over there. And we look back at pictures, even like when Facebook memories come up, I didn't look great. I actually looked like not great. I looked older than I am. And it is really about taking good care of yourself. Yeah, you should do that for me, will you? But, you know, kids now are back in school or going back to school. We were talking about the fact that kids should not go back to school until after Labor Day, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a big proponent that summer is important for kids.
Yeah.
It's important for families.
Yeah.
It's a time to grow.
Yeah.
Relationships physically, mentally.
Yeah.
And I just think that compressing the summer like we've done over the years, we take a day away, day, then becomes a week.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's this is just my opinion. I don't think it's right. I think that that summer, especially people living in Chicago, by the way, where our winters can be long.
That's very true.
They're not as harsh as they used to be, by the way, but they're long. I think that this is a time where the sun is out and you can go outside and play and go road trips. So, yeah, I think that summer is too short. And I think that we should think about, should we return to the old days where kids have really long summers and a chance to breathe, right, and be with their families. So I'm one of those parents where, like, when school's coming back, I'm sad. I have fun with my kids and hanging out with them and letting them sleep late.
So that's why I keep doing it, too. So I will do this, you know, summer ends this year, September 22nd, I think, Sunday, September 22nd. So back to school doesn't mean summer ends. It means your vacation ends. Yeah. And but I still like doing those weekend trips and stuff and enjoying the weather. My sister's a principal down in Nashville, and they started a couple weeks ago already.
I mean,
with no air conditioning in most of the schools, so it makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It's too much. I don't know who makes these decisions, but, you know, I guess no one really asked me, but for my money, I think kids need a break. You wonder why kids, by the way, are having all these mental health crises.
Yeah,
I think because there's a lot of pressure. And I think that summer is a great way to relieve some of that pressure and allow them to just hang out and do whatever comes out for that day. And then they'll be in better better shape going back to school.
Things I think about, and when I hear from other people's kids too, is families are always busy, busy lives. Getting a good breakfast out the door before a school day is critical. Like, I will make a full breakfast in the morning for my kids.
It's critical, but it's difficult. And I want to empathize with people. First of all, you know, everyone has different pressures and different stresses in their houses, right? But first of all, having the right foods, when I say right, having foods that are healthy for your kids. You want your kids to have the healthiest breakfast possible. That sometimes, for a lot of kids, that's their most important meal of the day.
Yep.
It gets them started. They've been fasting all night, sleeping. So they need these good nutrients. They need these calories. So having the healthy foods in the house is a hurdle for a lot of people. I understand that, by the way. Number two, having your parents who are able to prepare a meal, right?
Working parents.
Who are working, who are also trying to get ready to go do what they have to do to make money for the family. That also is a hurdle. And third, you know, kids don't sit still.
That's true.
Right? So kids are moving and grooving and getting ready and on their phones. And blah, blah. So it's just, it's a very different time. But all that being said, I think that families need to be committed.
Yes.
To make sure that their kids are going to school well fed.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of those kids, you can't control what they eat at school. You may see them later at night, but if they have after school activities, dinner can be kind of on the road. But breakfast is a time where everyone has to be in the house at night to go to school the next morning, so you really have total control of the environment.
You do. I'm told I got to go to break. We got some texters calling in. We're talking to Dr. Ian more after this on 720 WGN. All right, we are talking to Dr. Ian Smith. He's got a new novel out called Eagle Rock. He's got a new book coming out this January called Eat Your Age. Never in history has there been so many grandparents taking care of their grandchildren while parents are headed to work. And you know, as soon as kids are heading back to school, my sister, principal, already told me she's sick because that's what happens in the school environment.
Yeah.
You know, coughs and flu. And what are some tips for kids to be more resilient? How do we prevent the grandparents from getting sick and all this? And a lot of it is eating healthy and having a good meal.
Well, also your immune systems.
Yeah.
So, you know, keeping your immune system as healthy and as robust as possible is really, really important. So vitamins C, D, and E are really, really important, making sure you're getting enough of that in the foods that you eat. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you don't have to be a food scientist to figure this out. You Google what are the best sources of these particular vitamins, and they will show you literally like this fruit, this vegetable, whatever it is. So vitamin C, D, E, very important for your immune system. The other part of it is, and this sounds very old-fashioned, Dave, but, you know, we have to do a better job of cleaning surfaces.
Yeah.
It's important.
Wow. Yeah. You forget.
Most respiratory illnesses are transmitted, if not via air droplets, but because it's on surfaces. Door handles, desk drawers.
I think we've forgotten about that since COVID.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. And we have to get back to keeping clean. So if kids using sanitizer, washing their hands before they do something with food put in their mouth, because it's usually hands to mouth, that's, or hands to nose.
True.
But if we can do a better job of keeping schools clean, surfaces clean, making sure kids are participating in good hygiene practices, that just doesn't help the kids, by the way. It helps the teachers, and it helps people at home, because the kids are going home to a family. Teachers are going home. So everyone's leaving the school environment and bringing it home. And then then it starts spreading. And so I think that we need to just be more hygienic.
Texter 630 is asking, how long should a seventh grader sleep at night? What is the minimum to be fresh for that? I know it's different. I pulled this up. Toddlers 11 to 14, children 3 to 5, 10 to 13 hours, 6 to 12, 9 to 12 hours, teenagers 8 to 10. And you know these kids aren't getting a full night of sleep like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, sleep is really critical. As we get older, the less sleep we need, but we still need sleep. So when you talk about a person in seventh grade, you know, I think 9 hours, you know, of sleep
minimum
is good for them. They got to rest. They're very active, and their bodies need time to restore. They're also growing, by the way.
It's true.
And what people don't realize is that sleep is restorative. During sleep, our body makes up for a lot. It hits the reset button. So I would think someone in ninth grade, you know, 9 hours of sleep would be appropriate. Obviously, everyone doesn't sleep through the night for all kinds of reasons. That's a whole nother, you know, show. But if someone said, what is my goal, it'd probably be 9 hours.
You know, we were, my girlfriend and I were flying back from LA last week, and she pulled up an article about melatonin. And it's a trend right now. And it's not a healthy one, by the way, of giving kids melatonin to sleep without really understanding the risks. And those numbers are rising. And I don't like it.
Well, sleep aids are very tricky. Some people do need sleep aids for various reasons. They have medical conditions. Sure. They have sleep disruptors that they can't control. Sleep aids, when administered under proper supervision, can be very helpful. However, you have to be careful, because if you become dependent on a sleep aid, then all of a sudden you've now kind of altered the body's chemical system and biological clock, circadian rhythm, to the point where you can't sleep now without that aid.
Yeah, it's a problem.
So what happens if you don't have it? Let's say you're on a trip somewhere and you don't have access to something. What are you going to do? Then you're not going to be able to sleep. So I think that people have to be very careful about which sleep aids they use, how often they use it, and make sure it's supervised. Some kids need it. Some adults need it. But, you know, the best thing is, I tell people all the time, look at someone's sleep environment. Mm-hmm. Are they on their phone or computer within an hour and a half going to sleep?
Hour and a half, by the way.
Blue light and blue screens, not good. Are they overly active before they go to sleep? What are they eating relative to going to sleep? Yeah. There are lots of things that we do that are not good as far as creating a good sleep environment.
There was a recent study I read analyzing 25 melatonin gummy products that found 22 contained different amounts of melatonin than the label showed. And some had melatonin, some called them sleep aids, and then some didn't have anything. And then they had other substances like serotonin in there. So you really have to do your homework.
Welcome to the dangers and the wild, wild west of supplements.
Yeah.
Supplements are not regulated by the FDA. There's a reason why they're not regulated, because they have a very powerful lobby that doesn't want it to be regulated. But when you don't have these kind of regulations, then you have all these kinds of disparities.
Right.
Something says it has this much, you do a test, it doesn't have that much.
Right.
So, you know, that's why I tell you all the time, when you are buying supplements, I'm not against supplements, okay? Supplements can be very helpful, but make sure you are buying supplements from a credible source and that there is good research behind that particular supplement that you're buying.
Quick peek into this new book coming out early in the year. It's called Eat Your Age. Sounds interesting to me, because you do eat different things, and your body, your metabolism changes over time too, right?
Simple concept.
Yeah.
What are the best foods, the best exercises, the best tests, the numbers you should know for your particular decade of life?
Mm-hmm.
30s, 40s, 50s, 60s plus, everyone, there is that information that is really specific for your decade. Also, what is a 30-day meal plan that is best for you in your 50s or your 60s or your 30s? And so the book really breaks it down per decade of what you should be doing. And I think people are going to really love this book, because 30-year-olds are going to want this book, 70-year-olds and 50-year-olds. Everyone's going to want this book because...
Dick Van Dyke.
And Dick Van Dyke can use the book. Though, by the way, he should be telling me, because obviously he's done something right for 98 and a half.
He should do a foreword.
That's right. But anyway, that's the idea behind Eat Your Age, is what are the best things that we should be putting into our body? What tests should we be getting? Because what diseases are most prevalent per decade?
It's true.
I think it's going to be a very informative book. I think people are going to like it. People who have heard about it are excited about it, because it applies to all of us.
So we did say summer ends September 22nd. So what's still on your checklist to go out and do and enjoy by yourself, with your family, with your wife?
Play a lot more golf.
Yeah.
Get some more Italian ice.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I love Italian ice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a place on 35th Street. I won't plug companies, but there's a place on 35th Street. I love their Italian ice. And I think, you know, just do more like around the house.
Yeah.
Like sometimes okay. just, I travel a lot.
Yeah.
Just being around the
you
house.
I appreciate being at home
and doing things with my family. Simple things, by the way, watching a show or being out in the backyard. Grilling, maybe. Just a little simple stuff.
You can grill year-round, which I love, by the way. Dr. Ian Smith, his new novel is Eagle Rock, and the new book, Eat Your Age, comes out early next year. Thank you, my friend, and congrats on the new book, and I always look forward to chatting with you.
Dave, we've been doing this for a long time, and I'm always excited when you're on the calendar. Thank you so
sir.
Much.
Thank you. All right, we'll be right back at 720 WGN.